Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Jim.
All right, Jim, so the Twins had their game suspended last night due to rain. They had a 2-1 lead in the fourth inning. Somebody had asked me this, and I wasn't sure the answer. Maybe you know it. So how does baseball work? I know you have to have at least 5 innings for a game to count. When you're under 5 innings, when does it trigger a possibility of a suspension? Or is there a point where you just scrap it and say none of it counted and you'll have to start over?
Basically, if you've gotten, it's kind of a feel thing and a situational thing. So this was really easy, right? They are in the fourth inning. One team has the lead. They're playing the next night. It's very easy to finish this game. So why not finish the game? You know, they want to play as many games as possible and stay on schedule as much as possible. This is really easy to do. Now, if this was 2-1 in the fourth inning of a getaway day and the Guardians were leaving that, you know, Monday night and there had to be some place on Tuesday, then they just would have scrapped it. You know, so if you can play it, they'll find a way to play it. If you can't play it, they'll scrap it and just start over some later date.
So what do you think about, you know, with the rain that we have forecasted today, if they can't get one or either of the games in today, would they try to play two tomorrow? Any idea what the Twins might be thinking here?
I would think that they would try to play a doubleheader tomorrow. And I would guess they'd start like 11 and try to play a traditional doubleheader with just a half hour break between the games, try to get two games in tomorrow. It looks really bad today. I will also say that I've never, in my experience, the Twins have not manipulated the schedule the way some teams do. They generally just want to play the games. It would not be the worst thing if, even though they're playing well, it wouldn't be the worst thing if any or all of these games got scrapped and they were played when you had Buxton, Correa, Wallner, Kiesel all healthy, and maybe Zebby Matthews on track later this summer.
Yeah, it certainly would be, you know, good timing, I suppose, if they had those guys back. And what does this do to their pitching staff, too? I mean, because, you know, I'm guessing you can't bring Bailey Ober back. You only get 3 innings out of him, so then you got to try to piece it together. And then if you have to push things back to tomorrow, then you kind of screws up your rotation for maybe the weekend or next week.
I don't think they'll let it screw up their rotation. You know, as you said, what if you end up playing 2 games on Wednesday? I don't think the rotation is the big worry. You can always call up David Festa if you needed to. You could probably call Simeon Woods Richardson back if you really needed to. It's really more about bullpen depth and fatigue. But again, you can always call up a starter from the minor leagues and have him pitch 2-3 innings in the middle of the game. It's not ideal, and you know it's not the best baseball. But if you're going to test, you know, if you're going to test some team's pitching depth, the Twins probably end up in pretty good shape in that regard. They do have pitching depth. They have kind of 7 starters they like. They have a bunch of really good bullpen arms. They have some bullpen arms that can stretch out to 2 innings, and they have, you know, the minor league team is 10 minutes away. So, you know, it wouldn't be ideal, but they wouldn't really have too many excuses either. They have enough pitching depth to get through this.
You know, Jim, certainly I know you probably know pretty deep into as far as what the Twins have and, you know, in their minor league organizations, whether it be St. Paul or even down to Double A. But I had never heard of Carson McCusker until he got in and played last night. Big guy. Is he a guy who's considered a prospect or organizational depth? How would you characterize him?
He made himself into a real prospect, and it's going to be really interesting to see how he handles this little challenge here. He was a good college player, but he was 6'8", big, strong guy, and he never hit for power. He just didn't generate bat speed. Went to independent ball, wasn't getting any sniffs, almost quit baseball, and then just decided to give it one more shot and kind of went all in on the power aspect. Started in and out. He has tremendous bat speed. He has tremendous power. He also strikes out a lot. So, you know, is he Joey Gallo? Is he a guy who can hit major league pitching? Is he a guy who can hit enough power for you to justify the strikeouts? All that, you know, he's got to prove that at this level. But he has made himself into a prospect just because you don't give up on guys with bat speed.
And he's a right-handed hitter, so yep. I mean, he was in the lineup last night against a lefty, which made some sense. Is he a decent defender, big arm, anything like that because of the size he has?
Honestly, I think he's an average defender, but I tend to want to see somebody for myself before I make any judgments on the defense. It's easy to analyze people by the offensive statistics. Defense, I want to see it myself. So I think he's an average defender, but I'd like to reevaluate that after I get to see him.
Jim, let's talk about the Timberwolves. They're playing tonight, game one at Oklahoma City against the Thunder. It's a 7:30 game. All the games are 7:30 except for game seven. If we get to that point, then it'd be a 7 o'clock game. A lot of attention on this series. Certainly some interesting matchups. Best players in each team are both shooting guards, point guards, and Anthony Edwards and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Your thoughts on these teams and what you think the keys might be to this series?
It's going to be fascinating. And it's hard to pinpoint. I mean, the keys for the Wolves, don't turn the ball over. Oklahoma City takes advantage of turnovers as well as anybody. And I think the Wolves can guard Oklahoma City fairly well in half court. I don't know that they can stay with them if it gets to be a track meet and if Oklahoma City's really open to get up. The Wolves are not as good a transition team as they probably should be. And they just can't afford the turnovers and free buckets going the other way. I think keys are you have two young stars. One knows how to get calls. The other doesn't. How much will that affect this, the outcome of this series? If Gilgeous-Alexander is shooting 20 free throws a night, Oklahoma City's going to win. If Anthony Edwards can't get to the foul line at all, that's going to make it really hard on the Wolves. So can Edwards find a way to get calls? Will the officials be savvy to the way that SGA draws fouls and not give them the benefit of the doubt every single time? That's a big factor. And one thing we don't know. We don't know who's going to guard who. You know, is it going to be McDaniels on SGA? Is it going to be Dort on Ant? Is it possible? You know, are those players capable of getting the people guarding them in foul trouble and ruining that plan? How much will they shade toward the star? How much will they double the star? How do the stars react to that? And then I think both coaches are very capable of making in-game adjustments. So whatever we think the plan is going to be right now might change, you know, 5 minutes into the first period. So it's going to be fascinating. Two really intelligent organizations, really good coaches, really deep rosters. And, you know, one thing, the Wolves generally should have an advantage with their bench. Oklahoma City has a pretty good bench. If the Wolves bench plays to its best of its capabilities, it still has the advantage. They have three starting caliber guys coming off the bench. If those guys play well, but they, all three of those guys have been up and down during the course of these playoffs. Are they ready to play their best? That might be as important as anything.
Jim, is OKC a pretty good 3-point shooting team?
They are, you know, they're good. They are a decent 3-point shooting team. But what's really interesting about them is that as modern as they are as a franchise and their thinking and all and analytics and everything, they are very happy to take the open two. You know, they SGA is really he can shoot the three, but he's really somebody who gets in the paint and hits a two, hits a tough two, draws a foul, kicks out to teammates, creates it. He plays an old school style game. And, you know, Anthony Edwards had kind of an old school style game until he really pushed the 3-point shooting this year and became a tremendous 3-point shooter. But, you know, I don't know whether, I don't know how much either of these teams, the Wolves want to shoot the three. I'm not sure Oklahoma City wants to think about the three as a key part of their game. I think they just want it to happen.
Jim, how about Rudy Gobert? How big of impact could he have? Certainly we saw in the Lakers series, largely he didn't play a big role because they just didn't have a lot of bigs, and then he played a much larger role in the last series against Golden State. What do you think about how he's going to fit in here?
Well, he is very capable of being the absolute best player and most dominant force on the court. He's also capable of doing his job without having it show up in traditional stats. He's also capable of playing badly. He's a big variable. In many ways, maybe that should be his nickname, the big variable. You know, Tim Duncan was the big fundamental. Gobert is the big variable. You just don't know what you're going to get. In general, the baseline is he's going to defend and rebound very well, and then the offense is a mystery. But you also don't know whether he's going to catch the ball particularly well on a nightly basis. So I don't know what to expect from him. Hartenstein is smart and tough and has that nice little floating push shot. Can he get that over Gobert if Gobert is really trying to deny that to him? Can he do what the Mavericks did last year and get behind Gobert for dunks if Gobert shades away from the rim? I don't know I just don't know what that's going to look like. I really don't. And then, you know, Chet Holmgren, can he go inside and can he go at Gobert in the paint, or is he going to be a perimeter shooter and an open jump shooter? These are all mysteries that are to be solved.
All right, Jim, what do you got in your podcast?
Let's see. We have pretty much the full slate up at TalkNorth.com. I highly recommend John Krasinski's show on where the Wolves, how the Wolves got to this point. It's a great way to start this series by listening to that. We have Mark Rosen Sports Monday out. Mark and myself talking about all the winning going on in Minnesota right now. That's a nice, fresh show. We have Russo on hockey, Kevin Gorg on hockey, Bar Down Beauties on hockey, Alec Lewis, the Athletic beat writer on the Vikings, Jeff Diamond show on the Vikings, the Viking Update show, the Chin Music show with Lavelle and myself talking about the Twins winning streak, and everything's at TalkNorth.com or in your favorite podcast app.
All right, Jim. Thank you. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks, Jim.
It's Jim Suhan, Star Tribune sports columnist, joining us every weekday morning at this time. Follow him on Twitter at SuhanStrib. Check out his latest column in the Star Tribune or his podcasts at TalkNorth.com. Dream Getaway 86 continues. First code word of the day is YOUNG. Y-O-U-N-G. YOUNG. Type that in. You can win a vacation of a lifetime. First code word is YOUNG. Y-O-U-N-G. Next on WJON, we have world and national news from ABC that's brought to you by Executive Express.